If you are new to the fellowship or a returned visitor after a long time and you would like to introduce yourself, you are welcome to do so, but do please wait for the microphone. So do we have anyone who would like to introduce themselves to the fellowship? Okay, we have one hand up here. Right over here.
Hi, Aaron Ford. Good to be back on spring break. Good to see all of you and enjoying this beautiful Kansas weather.
Yay! All right. Thank you. All right, we would like you to, we are going to do our announcements are in the bulletin. There's quite a few on the insert. So I would refer you to those. And we also have some other announcements. Today, the Voice for Justice will meet at 2 p.m. at the First United Methodist Church on the second floor in the library. This is our project to aid local immigrants, so please consider joining us. See Ann Cowan or Michael Oldfather for more information. And again, this is Voice for Justice at 2 p.m. at the First United Methodist Church, second floor in the library. Also, the League of Women Voters is doing a presentation on human trafficking. Marissa Larson, our member, is going to be the presenter, and this will be Saturday, March 28th at 9:30 to 11:30 at the Public Library. And then next Saturday, again, this is, be consistent here, Saturday, March 28th, a presentation on human trafficking, 9:30 to 11:30 in the Public Library. And then next Saturday, MAPTA is going to hold their annual meeting here. It's going to be a potluck with speakers who are organized for fast food workers. See the newsletter on Fair Trade Table or see Ann Cowan. Again, that's next Saturday, the annual meeting of MAPTA. Thank you for submitting those announcements. This is a reading from Paul Robeson. I shall take my voice wherever there are those who want to hear the melody of freedom or the words that might inspire hope and courage in the face of despair and fear. My weapons are peaceful, for it is only by peace that peace can be attained. The song of freedom must prevail. And in that spirit, I light the chalice. And now would you please stand as you are able for our rousing hymn, number 162, Gonna Lay Down My Sword and Shield.
Now this is a spirited song, so sing it with spirit. And if you can't get behind us, drop an octave. And feel free to use your own notes.
Thank you.
Thank you, Larry. Thank you, Renee. That was exciting. Now is the time in our order of service when we're going to share our joys and concern, the key moments of our lives with others. And so please be free to feel free to share and wait for the microphone.
Yesterday, I learned to ride my bike without any training wheels, and I got a new 24-inch bike.
Hi, this is Scott Denona. I've got a joy that the UUFM has been awarded a Chalice Lighters grant. If you haven't heard, this is from Mid-America. It's a program where people submit money to this program, and it's for growth-oriented projects, right, in the area. So our growth project is moving up from part-time to full-time minister, and we've got the grant. We don't know the full amount yet, right, but this is to support us moving up, and it hopefully will be up to 10 grand. We're the first in line to get the full amount, so it's a good deal.
Hi, everybody. Molly McGoy. I read in the paper today something about two of our members, so I just want to acknowledge it because I know that they've worked hard in years to get to these points. I think Mary Lynn Higginbotham was officially announced with tenure in clinical sciences, so congratulations to you and your family for anything they've done to help you get to this point. And Carolyn Ferguson was recognized as full professor. So congratulations to both of you.
Larry Weaver, I had a surprise, and it was a joy. A couple of days ago, I was in New Mexico, Taos, New Mexico, in a coffee shop while my wife was looking at some art. And into the coffee shop came Jack and Susan Oviatt, who asked to be remembered to everybody here. And so this is a nice example of the small world phenomenon.
It's really not my place to make this announcement, but on Facebook this morning, I saw that Jean Seaver's mother has died. So there was an announcement of the service, and I think it's in Junction City. Does anybody else know? Maybe on Wednesday. I'll copy it and put it on the listserv.
Hello, this is Michael. I just wanted to follow up on what Scott said. If you are not rolled up as a Chalice Lighter, please do so. This program funds so many important developmental projects across our larger and larger district. Please look up Chalice Lighters and participate. It's such a great program.
Continued reading of the morning news identified Kristen Corwin and Brian Washburn as recipients of sabbaticals. So if they're missing, among the missing, in the next year or so, why, you'll know that they're off doing wonderful things.
We're planning to go to Boulder in the fall, which is where we met and where he moved into my office. And I decided, well, either I'll just resent this taking over of my space or date him. So we're going back to where we were very happy, and we're looking forward to it.
Thank you. And for those joys and concerns left in your heart, we carry them with you. And now we have a lovely moment with Sandy Nelson, who's going to do our children's story today. So the young and the young at heart, please come forward.
Yeah. Jump. Everybody jump as you come.
Yes, jump as you come.
Good morning, good morning. Can anybody tell me what this is? Or what this is? Or what this is? They're books. Hey, you guys are smart.
That was easy.
Will you hang on to that? Today we're going to talk about
But the adults are talking about, you know what? I'm bad. I didn't read this. Did anybody read the program this morning? Any children read the program this morning? It says, should we do anything about a murder? Ooh. You know, when I read that a couple days ago, I read it wrong, and it scared me. And I learned that it's hard to come up with a children's story about a murder. But I did some more research and thought, you know, there's a story in these books down here and in other books and in this book that might be the one that we should read. Okay, I'll read this one. Those look a lot bigger, don't they? It's actually, the story is just a piece of those bigger books down there. And this book is called The Golden Rule. You know that already? That's good. And this one says it's by Eileen Cooper, illustrated by Gabby Switkowska. The Golden Rule. It has a lot of good pictures. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. A boy and his grandfather stood on a sidewalk looking up at the words printed on a billboard. Grandpa, what does that say? The boy asked. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. People all over the world call those words the Golden Rule. What does it mean? The boy wanted to know. And why is it golden? It means this. Treat people the way you would like to be treated. It's golden because it's so valuable. And a way of living your life that's so simple, it shines. Grandfather led the boy to another billboard farther down the sidewalk. Some people put the golden rule another way. Do nothing to other people that you would not like having done to you. Either way, he said, it's a very good rule. Who's it for? The boy asked. You and me, anyone can practice the golden rule. A rule that's the same for children and grown-ups? Same rule. There aren't too many rules like that. Very few. And it's for people everywhere? Everywhere. Whatever their religion, people find the idea of the golden rule in their holy books, Grandfather said. Christianity says you should love your neighbor as you love yourself. That's one of those books down there. It's called the Bible. Judaism says, what is hateful to you, do not do to your fellow humans. Islam says, hurt no one so that no one may hurt you. Hinduism says, this is the sum of duty, to do nothing to others which would cause them pain. Buddhism says, do not do to others what would hurt you. The Shawnee tribe says, do not kill or injure your neighbor, for it is not he or she that you injure. You injure yourself. The boy and his grandfather sat on a park bench. So, Grandpa, how can I start to practice the golden rule? You begin by using your imagination. My imagination? You imagine how someone else feels. For instance, a new child who is joining your class. How do you think that boy or girl is feeling? New kids always look scared. Would you be scared if it was you? Oh, yes. What would make you feel better? If someone smiled at me. So, to practice the golden rule, you would smile at the new kid. You've got it. I bet you can think of other ways you'd like to be treated and ways you wouldn't want to be treated. How do you feel when you're teased or bullied? Sad, yes. Mad, yes. Small, I feel small. Sad, mad, small. Do you like feeling like that? No, neither does anyone else. The boy thought for a moment about the golden rule. I see. There are lots of things I can do. I should tell the truth because I don't like being lied to. I want people to listen to me, so I should listen to other people. When I'm sick or when I'm tired, sometimes I need help. So I should offer my help to those who need it. You're getting the idea, Grandfather nodded. The boy looked at his grandfather. Practicing the golden rule seems like it can be hard. I said it was simple. I didn't say it would always be easy. Grandpa, the boy said, the golden rule is a very big thing, isn't it? Very big. And very small. And very old. It's been around for thousands of years. Thousands of years? Well then, I don't think everyone is practicing the way they should. Otherwise, there wouldn't be so many problems between people, between countries. You're right, my boy. I wonder how things would change if everyone lived by the golden rule. I think people would be nicer, kinder. They'd act better toward their families and friends, and even strangers. What if countries lived by the golden rule? Grandfather said. Well, then people wouldn't want to hurt each other because they don't like being hurt. Maybe there wouldn't be wars. That would be wonderful, wouldn't it? Wonderful, Grandpa. But you can't make everyone in the world practice the golden rule. There's only one person you can ask to do that. Me? You. It begins with you. And that's it. Thank you. Thank you.
you, Renee.
This is a reading, The Expiation of Untraced Murder, from Deuteronomy. If one can be found slain in the land which the Lord thy God giveth thee to possess it, lying in the field, and it be not known who hath slain him, then thy elders and thy judges shall come forth, and they shall measure unto the cities which are around him that is slain, or round him that is slain. And it shall be that the city which is next unto the slain man, even the elders of that city, shall take a heifer which hath not been wrought with, that means worked, and with hath not drawn in the yoke. And the elders of that city shall bring down the heifer unto a rough valley, which is neither eared nor sown, and shall strike off the heifer's neck there in the valley. And the priests and sons of Levi shall come near, for them the Lord thy God hath chosen to minister unto him, and to bless in the name of the Lord, and by their word shall every controversy and every stroke be tried. And all the elders of that city that are next unto the slain man shall wash their hands over the heifer that is beheaded in the valley. And they shall answer and say, Our hands have not shed this blood, neither have our eyes seen it. Be merciful, O Lord, unto thy people Israel, whom thou hast redeemed, and lay not innocent blood unto the people of Israel's charge, and the blood shall be forgiven them. So shalt thou put away the guilt of innocent blood from among you, when thou shalt do that which is right in the sight of the Lord. Our program today is presented by Reverend James Atwood. He's a man on a mission. Reverend Atwood is a Presbyterian minister and author of America and Its Guns, a Theological Exposé. There was quite a bit on the internet when I looked it up. Reverend Atwood has also been unanimously selected by the Presbyterian Peace Fellowship National Committee to receive the 2014 Peace Seeker Award. Welcome, Reverend Atwood.
Thank you for the warm welcome I received here. It's wonderful to be here in Manhattan and to be at this Unitarian Universalist Church. I think that people like you who are friendly, who are liberal and open and seeking and committed are friendlier than the people who aren't. I find that in the year 2000, I was the interfaith chairman of the Million Mom March. And I found that the people who were the most committed, generally speaking, to what we were trying to do with the Million Mom March were Unitarians. And I'm grateful for that, and grateful. I was thoroughly moved by this vision statement that you all have drawn up. This is a marvelous piece of work, and I'm going to steal it and take it back home because a whole lot of people I know need to express their faith as you have expressed yours. Thank you for the invitation to be here. I have been honored to accept the invitation of the Topeka Center for Peace and Justice invitation, along with the United Methodist Church, to talk to churches mainly throughout Kansas and Nebraska about what I believe is the greatest spiritual, ethical, moral issue before the people of the United States, and that is gun violence. Before I get into my sermon, I want to pay tribute to my chauffeur. I've had a chauffeur all these days. to take me here and there throughout both these states. And he is a committed peacemaker, Dwayne Johnson. Would you stand up, Dwayne? Dwayne is also he's a member of the Topeka Center for Peace and Justice. He's a Mennonite, and he's a good driver, and he is also a poet. And he's I hope you hear from his poetry before long, but it's great to travel with him and great to be here. I will recognize that you have a game that you want to see tonight, and I promise to get you out of here by 4:30. Regarding the message from Deuteronomy, which Kathy has just read, I imagine a similar conversation taking place after a body was found in the wilderness in ancient Israel. There's been a murder, did you hear? No, who? I don't know. What do you mean you don't know? We know everybody in the village. But it's not one of our people. And it didn't happen in our village. Well, who is he? Where's he from? And where did it happen? No one knows these things anyway. Somebody, and we don't know who, was walking way out in the middle of nowhere and found a body. He was murdered. Well, that's terrible, but glad we're not responsible for that. But we are responsible. Our elders and judges are out in the wilderness even now to determine which of the villages will perform rituals for our purification. Our whole land has been defiled. What do you mean, our purification? It's not our fault. Somebody was killed way out in the middle of nowhere. What was he doing out there anyway? Come now, we're not responsible for that. Yes, we are. We're Jews. Our lands have been defiled. Each of us bears responsibility for this crime. We must purify our land. Don't you understand, man? Somebody's been murdered. Do you want to live in a village where murder is accepted? Do you want our elders and judges to say indiscriminate killing doesn't matter, even if it's a stranger? Today's scripture is from a law code of ancient Israel. And because the crime scene was far from any village and involved only one death, it would probably have been ignored in many societies. But it could not be ignored in Israel, because a murder pollutes the entire community, and people had to be cleansed of that guilt. Israel's relationship with God required a cleansing for a murder, even if no one knew the victim or the perpetrator. One of God's precious children had been violated. And elders and judges from every community in the district had a duty to perform. They met at the crime scene. They met at the body and literally stepped off from the body to their respective communities, to their respective neighborhoods. Priests from the nearest village were appointed to sacrifice a young heifer to purge away the sins of all who lived in that entire geographical area. The ancient liturgy that Kathy read at the Wadi is strange to all of us, about breaking the heifer's neck and washing hands, etc., etc. That's strange to all of us, but stranger still is the immediacy with which these ancient people, without benefit of cell phones and instantaneous communication, trekked out into the hinterland to take responsibility for an unknown murder victim whose body was discovered far away from their own homes and villages. I can't help but wonder how blessed America would be today and how hallowed our cities and towns would become if people of faith took comparable measures to purify our communities after thousands of people are shot and killed within our own city limits. Gun violence saturates all our lives, particularly the lives of children who live in the inner cities and whose sleep is interrupted by gunshots. In our country, a child or a teenager is injured from guns every 30 minutes. Every 3 days, we endure the equivalent of a Newtown massacre. More children under 5 years of age, that is kindergarten age, were killed by guns in the year 2010 than law enforcement officers were killed in the line of duty. In the 32 years between 1978 and 2010, more children and teens alone died from guns than all U.S. soldiers killed in action in the Korean, Vietnam, Afghanistan, and Iraq wars combined. And I'm now just talking only children. 32,000 is the total number of American victims to gun violence. I've been working to prevent gun violence for 40 years. I got in it because a young man in Springfield, Virginia, went to the bowling alley and said to his buddy, "I don't have any money." And his buddy reached in his jacket and pulled out a Saturday night special and said, "Here, go get yourself some money. And when you do, give me $20 and you can keep the gun." My church member had his hands in the air as the young fellow helped himself to the cash register. And he was backing away from him and tripped on a rug. And it startled the boy, and he turned around and shot him 3 times. And he died 2 days later of a lacerated liver. And I was livid. And I drove, after the funeral, I drove down to D.C. and volunteered my services at the Coalition to Stop Gun Violence, and I've been there ever since. Until fairly recently, it's been difficult for many churches, temples, etc., to talk about gun violence. And I've seen dozens of conversations derailed because someone said, "This is a political problem. And we shouldn't be talking about that. We're a religious community." Hey, you know, we've got a 501c3 too. we get too involved with politics, and they could take that 501c3 away from us. We're a spiritual community. We don't talk about political things. They didn't read a vision statement like this. I'm sure you're aware of similar protestations when the subject of gun violence comes up in the state of Kansas. Not too many Kansas really want to talk about it. It's the elephant in the living room, isn't it? I don't think gun violence is a political issue any more than arson is a political issue. Or drunk driving. I believe it's the greatest religious, spiritual, ethical, and moral problem in our nation. And it's getting greater in Kansas by the minute as you have some Neanderthal legislators wanting everybody to have guns. And when everybody has guns, by golly, we'll be safe. And the depth of our heartbreak has only increased because in the faith community, we as well as some legislators have listened to those who whined about gun rights instead of the voices of victims' families who wept at their graveside. 80% of all gun deaths in the entire developed industrial world occur in America. 87% of all children under 18 in the entire developed world are American kids. And the collusion of the gun empire and those who profit mightily from the sale of guns don't want Jews or Christians or Buddhists or Hindus or anybody else talking about guns. They'll do everything in their power to keep us talking from becoming a religious issue. Because gun violence, once it becomes for our faith communities, once it becomes a religious matter, a spiritual matter, an ethical matter, a moral matter, once that happens, the gun empire is going to pack its bags. But if we let it become the political matter, we don't stand a chance. You know, they did the same thing with slavery 200 years ago. Don't talk about slavery in the church. That's an economic, political matter. Talk about other things. Talk about card playing and dancing and drinking alcoholic beverages. Those are really tough issues. But don't talk slavery. That's a political, economic thing. And people of faith obeyed. They didn't want to upset Billy Bob and Bubba. They didn't want to do that. There's an inevitable connection between money and our unacceptable level of gun deaths. But it does, of course, have its political implications. But as I say, it's no more just political than is arson or drunk driving. Gun violence is a life or death issue in Kansas, and it needs a full airing among all those who believe in God. It's thoroughly nonpartisan. Guns kill Republicans and Democrats and independents, Tea Partiers, The victims are Jews, Christians, Muslims, Sikhs, Hindus, Buddhists, atheists and agnostics, and whites, blacks, Latinos, Asians, men, women, boys, girls, young, old, gay, straight, rich, poor, rural, urban, and gun owners and non-gun owners. No category of human being escapes America's gun violence. And moreover, I've noticed that when a member of a religious community is killed, they do not call their congressperson. They don't call a senator or the civil magistrate to conduct the funeral. They call a pastor or a rabbi or a priest or an imam. Dealing with death and its aftermath is not a political activity. Everybody recognizes that. Does it not follow that keeping God's children alive is also a moral responsibility? I'm thankful that you all care about that. And I'm thankful that more and more people around the country are caring about that. And they're meeting regularly to discuss the matter, to study the matter, and to have an effect in their communities. There have been 12 states that have inaugurated very strong gun laws since Newtown. Very strong gun laws. For example, the state of Maryland put in a new law that whenever a person applies for a concealed carry permit, they have to give a thumbprint, fingerprints. And Maryland's crime has gone down 26% since that law came into being. I'm sorry to say, Kansas repealed the same law that Maryland now has, and their crime rate went up 27%. There is a connection between good, sound gun regulations and numbers of deaths that we have. Good gun laws work. Another factor that I think we should take into consideration is the tremendous economic costs of gun violence to our communities. In 2003, I believe it was, the economic gun cost for the United States of America was set at $155 billion. $155. Now, we really can't afford that. We can't afford that, just like we can't afford 32,000 Americans killed. Tremendous cost to us. The biggest cost is in court costs and prisons and parole, and then medical costs come in, and then this need for security comes in, and we've got all these metal detectors in our schools and in our hospitals and in our public rooms, and we've got security guards in banks and in department stores, and we have to pay for that. $155 billion. When's the last time your representative talked about the economic costs of our killing one another so much? You ought to ask them. These ancient Jews discovered one body in the wilderness, and immediately they took action to purify their lands. Do we have any less responsibility to purify our lands, our cities, our towns. All God's people have a gigantic task to purify our communities today. And we can be, as we set about to do that, by talking about it, if for nothing else, just talk about it. If we set out to do that, to purify our communities, we will be living into a growing movement that is taking place all over this country. Now, you might say the guy's a lunatic for saying that. Is he delusional? Doesn't he know what's happening? When Newtown happened, and these 20 precious little children were slaughtered, that was a tipping point. And on to that tipping point, the U.S. Congress piled some more tipping points when they ignored 90% of the American people's wishes that all guns sold should have a background check. Congress ignored you, and they ignored me, and I'm ticked off about that. And there are a lot of Americans that are ticked off about that. And they're studying this issue, as I hope you will do, because when we study it and know how we got here, we will have means and motivation to purify our communities. I began this, as I say, 40 years ago, and I began with rage. I still get angry about what happened and what happens all across this country, but I stay in this movement because of my hope in God's promises that love is stronger than hate, life is more powerful than death, peace is more compelling than violence. And God's promises to build a human community where people will no longer hurt or destroy one another are far more influential than guns. Guns can only kill. But God's ways lead to life and to peace and justice for all. For the bottom line, it seems to me, is when people believe in God, it means we are all optimists. To believe in God means that what ought to be done can be done. And it's not God's will that gun violence become a norm in Kansas or anywhere else. So let's join hands with everyone of every faith, of every persuasion, and go out and work with energy, intelligence, imagination, and love in our hearts to stop the killing and purify our cities, our state, our country. And if you agree with that, say amen. Amen. Thank you for listening.
Terrible death to be talked to death. But now we can have a chat.
Thank you. Any comments or questions or yes, sir? Yes, sir. Oh, want the microphone.
One problem with the moral argument is that
and I'm with you. But the opposing side claims to be making a moral argument too. I mean, namely the argument that we'll be safer. We want to have less gun violence, and they claim we'll be safer. And so I just feel like my moral stance gets undercut when I bring up the moral argument.
Yeah, it sure does. I understand what you're saying. That is Exhibit A as to why you need to know some facts and you need to know some data. The data says that a gun which is purchased to protect one's house or one's family is 22 times more likely to end up killing a family member, a friend, or an acquaintance, or to be stolen and used in a crime than to stop an intruder. Now, those are facts. I'm not trying to sell books. I don't have any more. But I encourage you to buy my book. I've got all kinds of data in this book which will enable you to know some facts. And I think it's very important that we in the faith community study this issue. How did we get here? In America, how did we get here today in Kansas, the place where we are? Kierkegaard said life has to be lived forward, but it can only be understood backwards. How did we get to this point? And we need to know these things. Yes, sir.
Yes, I have a different concern that you didn't mention, and that is thinking back in my own personal history, my wife's father committed suicide.
Yeah.
With a gun. I have a dear friend whose father committed suicide. Both were World War II veterans. Yes. And acquired guns because of their military experience. I've recently read of the very high rate of suicide of military veterans of Iraq and Afghanistan. Seems to me this is a tragedy of the first magnitude that we provide such an easy way of people who are depressed of ending their lives. The argument is made, they could stab themselves or something, but nothing is effective as a firearm.
Absolutely. You're 100% correct. And there are just about twice as many suicides as there are homicides. There's one gun manufacturer which has made a gun which is particularly effective for old people. Old people do not have the strength to pull a trigger sometimes. And so they've made a gun where you can press your thumb down and fire a bullet, and it's very convenient for people who really want to end their lives. This is hardball here, but that's true. But you're absolutely right for bringing this up, and the rate of suicide is just going off the charts for these veterans. Some of them they kill themselves mostly within the first 3 years of their deployment. Yes. Oh, I'm sorry. Yes. Yes, ma'am.
I have a quick question. When I was younger, when people would fight like gangs and all that, they always used their fists or knives. Why did it become guns all of a sudden? Or was there some kind of shift in the... in consciousness or something, I don't know.
Guns are really effective. You won't kill anybody with a fist, usually. But it's just an escalation of the violence. I mean, and we as human beings have escalated our violence since caveman times. And, you know, when was it? I think it was in the 1100s that the Pope, the Pope wanted to put a ban on a new invention that was so horrible we could hardly think about it. It was the crossbow. The crossbow. And now think about that. I mean, that's nothing today, you know. But guns have elevated. I mean, guns elevate the damage and the ability to really pay somebody prepare a real deed on someone else far more than a schoolboy fight or whatever. And, you know, oftentimes I hear the gun empire will say, well, yeah, if they didn't have guns, they'd kill one another with baseball bats, or they'd kill one another with knives and stab them to death. No. Look up the data. There have been a few stabbings, but very few people out to kill somebody carry a knife around. They carry a gun. Yes.
I
you've
agree.
Got the mic. All right?
I agree. As a scientist and a professor, I think it's I hope your book gets in every person's home. I think it's all about educating and data, and that becomes more mainstream. That's not my comment, however. So I'm ashamed to admit I'm a sportsman, and I own guns for that purpose only. That said, I would have, as a liberal UU, probably is more liberal than anybody in this room, I would have no problem with people need to have, I don't have any handguns, I never will, with people having to go into the police department and to obtain a handgun. I don't understand why it's acceptable in society that unless you're a law enforcement person, that we have handguns, period. And I think, but going back to this, I think my daughter visiting here the last couple of weeks, right, we've gone to two movies, right, The Insurgent and what was the other one? Kingsman, both of which glorify gun use. So we have to, in society, we need to educate kids that guns are not glory.
Yeah, yeah. Let me tell you a story about the director of my weekday kindergarten in Arlington, Virginia, saw as the kids were assembling for class, he was standing right in the hall, and he was shooting people, you know, with his finger and his thumb, you know, bam, bam, you're dead, bang, bang, you're dead, bang, bang, you're dead. And our director went over to him and bent down right in front of him, looked him right in the eye, and she took his hand, straightened out those fingers, and he says, you know, we don't shoot people here. We don't shoot people here because everybody's special. Everybody's special. We don't shoot people, even pretend, because everybody is so special. And we have to teach that. Thank you for raising that. Yes?
Hi. maybe I'm just trying to clarify some of my own confusion, but I was born in 1938.
You're just a boy.
Just a boy. I was guessing you were the boy, but in any event, that's beside the point here. We both, I guess, grew up in a time of war, World War II, and that's war news every day, even little kid. My earliest dreams were of German planes strafing fields, and my earliest nightmares, I should say, and I could not escape. When I was about 12, I grew up mostly right here in Manhattan, in rural and urban Manhattan, such as urbanity as it has. And we had a big house out here, Deep Creek, and roof had a 6-12 pitch, and my brother was about 15 or 16, a little older. I was 12, and they walked into Smith Brothers, a store where the mall is now, small gun store, bicycles, all kinds of sporting goods, walked in, plunked down, $15, $10, something like that, and bought basically what was a 38 Saturday night special. It was a 38 Smith & Wesson. It wasn't much of a gun for that money. I bought a box of shells, cost $8, 38 caliber shells. And we played on the roof of this house, shooting at one another, live ammunition. There was a radio show you may remember called Inspector Keen, Tracer of Lost Persons. And my brother was the older, so he usually got to be Inspector Keen. He had the gun. But occasionally I'd get it, too, and I'd get to shoot back. We weren't really aiming for one another, but we wanted that bit of realism that the live ammunition gave us. You mentioned boys in a theater going with their fingers like that. I remember riding the school bus to town. You'd see an animal, and all the boys are on the bus going like this, you know, aiming pretend guns. Yeah. I guess what I'm trying to say is I grew up in a gun culture. Guns, I had guns. Other than the 38, we had 22s, we had shotguns, went hunting, went just plinking or whatever, did it. I never killed anybody, never fired a gun in anger. I don't, the only gun, we still live in rural Manhattan, so we have a 22 for varmints when they get into the chicken house or something, but other than that, and I don't even like to shoot, it's just dumb as far as I'm concerned, but there must be a question there somewhere. I guess what I'm trying to say is somehow back then it seemed like there was a lot less, there were a lot fewer murders than there are now. Now you pick up every day four or five people blown away somewhere by some madman. So do you have a comment?
Well, I grew up, I'm 4 years older than you are, I grew up with the same kind of thing, only I was, my heroes were Tom Mix, Hopalong Cassidy, Roy Rogers, and no, I didn't like Gene Autry. I didn't like Gene Autry. He sang too much, and he liked girls, you know, Gene Autry. It was very obvious he liked girls, but my heroes were these guys that conveyed three very powerful messages. One, we are the good guys. And the, as Tom Mix said, the good guys always win. And three, we win by violence. We are a people who like violence. How many people here like the Kansas City Chiefs? Or who's your football team? Kansas, you don't have a pro team here, okay? Well, I know you didn't have one here in the city, but I thought you might be followers of some pro team. But, I mean, violence, remember Duffy Daugherty? Remember he was a coach at Michigan State, and somebody said, football is a contact sport. He said, nonsense. Dancing is a contact sport. Said, football is a collision sport. And when I played football, I was one of the biggest kids in the school, and I weighed 190 pounds. Today, and I was a lineman, today our linemen, what do they weigh? 300 pounds. And they can run like the wind. And if you do the physics on the collisions, you get what the National Football League's dealing with now, concussions. And we have these concussions, but we do like that game, and I promise I'll be at the next football game to watch. But it's part of me. That violence is part of me. And violence is in our video games and in our movies. It's in our NASCAR. It's in our toys that we sell. It's in all of these things. We are a culture of violence, that like violence. Yes, ma'am.
Hi, Linda Krieger. You know, we do live in Kansas. We have concealed carry. We're going to have open carry. And to me, the NRA has always been about money for the gun industry. And so how do you fight that? You're not going to fight that in Kansas. We're not fighting it across the United States. So if I have a choice of, I don't have a choice of where I live. I don't have a choice right now of which country I live in. But if everybody would carry their gun open, then I have a choice. I can walk into the store and say, there's a gun. Stop at the manager. I'm not shopping here. There's a guy with an open gun. Now, I may not be able to shop anywhere, but if one person does that, at least I'm making a choice and I have some control. If five people do that in a business a day, maybe. If 100 people do it, you know, Joni Mitchell said that's a movement. You know, maybe we can have a movement where economically we strike back. Let everybody who wants to carry a handgun. And I agree, I have lots of friends who hunt. They're not going to carry their hunting rifles in. Yeah. But the people with the handguns, I'd like to know about, and I'd like them like a red badge of courage on their jackets so I can walk out with my money.
Bless and maybe, your
heart. Maybe the business people will then talk to our representatives in Kansas and make some sense out of some of this legislation.
Now, when is she going to have a service here? That's right. Exactly. Exactly.
I just wanted to say, since the end of the Second World War, things in Europe have changed dramatically. The city of Berlin, I was told by an American a couple of years ago, has two police officers dealing with gun violence, and that's a city of 3 million.
Yeah. I spent 9 years as a missionary in Japan, and I hunted then and have since many, I've always been a gun owner since 1957. But in Japan, when I took my shotgun there, the customs agent said, you can't carry the gun in here. We'll get the Yokohama police to take it and send it to Kobe, where you're going to be living for 2 years. And they'll tell you, the police there will tell you how you can get your gun back. So they came to the house, showed them my gun, said, asked me to identify it. Yes. Can you open and close it? How to operate it? Yes. I showed them that. And they said, now, if you want to get this gun back, you have to get a statement from a doctor that you are mentally and physically able to carry this gun or have this gun. And then you have to have hunting safety and gun safety courses. And when you get those, you can buy two licenses and we'll give the gun back. The last year I was in Tokyo, in 1973, there was one death by guns in the biggest city in the world at that time. One. You can rail against how crazy these, what a denial of my freedom and my ability to buy a gun like that, you know. But you can't dispute the fact that one person died by a gun in the biggest city in the world because of sensible laws like that. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Reverend Atwood. And now we'll sing one verse of our closing hymn, number 6, Just As Long As I Have Breath. Thank you and go in peace.